Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this Monday morning. Today I will be going over the Fulbright Scholar Program in Sub-Saharan Africa. We offer an ongoing series of webinars throughout our competition cycle on a variety of topics. And today, as I just mentioned, will be about our opportunities and awards in the Sub-Saharan Africa region. My name is Megan Anthony. You can call me May. And I will be hosting today's presentation. I manage outreach and recruitment for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program in Sub-Saharan Africa at the Institute of International Education in Washington, D.C. My job is to help you navigate the application process and find the right opportunity for you. Please note that the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program is aimed at U.S. citizens, scholars, and professionals. If you are a student, recent graduate, or a non-U.S. citizen, then I'd recommend looking at our website to find the Fulbright that you're eligible for. So what to expect today? The goal of this webinar is to help highlight some of the many opportunities throughout the region and to get you thinking about how to match your interest and expertise with the wealth of resources that we offer. I'm not sure if you've seen our website, but we do have several articles. We've been working on the Fulbright program for over 70 years, and many of our resources are online. I'll start with a brief introduction of the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, and then spend the majority of the time discussing 2019-20 opportunities that are available in Sub-Saharan Africa. Just to make sure that we're on the same page, I'd like to clarify that our application deadline this year is August 1st for opportunities fall 2019 and spring 2020, which I'll abbreviate in this presentation as 2019-20. I'll also touch upon the application process and share some tips for putting together a competitive application. While I hope to answer many of your questions during the webinar, there will be a question and answer period at the end, during which you can submit your questions by typing into the questions module on your screen. I'd also like to quickly announce that we will be hosting a Sub-Saharan Africa virtual advising session on June 19th. What this means is that we have a webinar that is specifically designed to give you an opportunity to ask questions and hear the questions that other applicants have. The Fulbright program was established, as I mentioned, over 70 years ago, in 1946 by William J. Fulbright, who at the time was a junior senator. It was created in the context of the worldwide turmoil after the Second World War. Senator Fulbright was a Rhodes Scholar, and he really saw the value in educational exchange. He saw the Fulbright program as a solution for promoting peace and understanding through educational exchange for the purpose of mutual understanding. The bill was introduced into Congress using the sale of surplus U.S. government war property and signed into law by President Truman. Today, we're still funded by an annual appropriation from Congress. Fulbright is the flagship international education program designed to increase mutual understanding between the people of the U.S. and people of other countries. This is why there are many Fulbright programs that send U.S. citizens abroad to teach, study, and research. And we also have programs that work in the opposite way. They send non-U.S. citizens to the U.S. to do exactly the same thing. If you have any students or colleagues abroad that would like to take advantage of these opportunities, there may be a Fulbright for them. Of course, we value academic achievement. But the heart of the program has been and will remain person-to-person diplomacy. To that end, we are sponsored by the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State. Our organization, the Institute of International Education, also called IIE, has assisted in the administration of the Fulbright Scholar Program for faculty and professionals since 1947. Of course, I haven't assisted in the program that long, but I do draw upon the experience of my colleagues who have worked with the program for several years in order to provide you the best guidance through this process. Since its inception, the Fulbright program has had over 370,000 participants, each chosen for their academic merit and leadership potential, with opportunities to exchange ideas and contribute solutions to international concerns. I do want to mention the eligibility requirements of the Fulbright program. At the time of application, there are several items of eligibility that must be met. And again, I'm specifically referring to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, which sends U.S. citizens abroad for teaching and research opportunities. U.S. citizen is an absolute requirement. In this case, permanent resident status is not sufficient. A PhD or equivalent professional or terminal degree is also a requirement in most cases, about 80% of cases. Examples of these are MBA, MFA for Arts, JD, MD. You can search our opportunities to see if there are cases where a PhD is not required. We are really explicit about what's required online. If you're applying for a teaching award, you'll need college or university teaching experience at the level and in the field of the proposed lecturing activity as specified in the award description. It's often about 5 years, but this can vary by award. On that note, you should keep in mind that requirements vary by award. If you're wondering why this is, countries often prefer scholars have specific experience or expertise. We list opportunities for each country in something that we call the Catalog of Awards, which is an online catalog. I'll show this to you later and go into more detail about these additional requirements. You can always reach out to me if you aren't sure if you qualify for a program or a particular award. I also want to mention that although previous lifetime limits were lifted, there is a two-year waiting period following the end of a grant if you are a previous Fulbright Scholar. So if you received a Fulbright Scholar Award previously, you should double check to make sure that you're eligible to apply. If you ended your Fulbright Scholar grant after August 2016, you would have to wait until August 2019 to reapply. So what is the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program? It is also known as the CORE Fulbright Program. If this seems like an odd name, as I mentioned earlier, several programs make up the Fulbright brand. It comprises the largest grouping of awards and was known for many years as the Senior Scholar Program. Each year, the program sends about 800 U.S. faculty and professionals abroad to over 125 countries to teach and complete research in a variety of academic and professional fields. We offer about 500 unique opportunities. So as you can guess, some countries offer multiple opportunities and are looking for different types of scholars and professionals. It's important to note that Fulbright Awards are not just for senior faculty members from a small group of institutions. Fulbright is committed to representing the diversity of America. Academics and professionals from a wide variety of institutions, states, academic rank, and tenure status receive grants each year and represent every field: performing artists, professional lawyers, independent and retired scholars, scientists, and postdoctoral candidates are just some examples of past grantees. We also have participation from several different types of institutions, including community colleges, private and public schools, large and small. All academic fields and many professional fields are eligible, and there are many options for scholars in interdisciplinary fields. Grant lengths vary, but are usually somewhere in between 3 and 12 months, depending on country. Some countries offer the flex option for serial grants, which I'll discuss briefly. The CORE program functions on an annual competition for the following academic year, so you can apply to one award per competition. Every year, the program is launched in early spring with an application deadline of August 1. And the reason why, it's such a long review period. So you apply now August 1st, or you apply this year August 1st for fall 2019, spring 2020. The reason why it's so long is because we have a very thorough review process, which I will touch upon in a little bit as well. So here in front of you, you will see a picture of the countries where we currently send Fulbright scholars in sub-Saharan Africa. And I will briefly talk about why we think some of the reasons we would encourage people to come to this region. So the fact that you made time to attend this webinar, thank you, by the way, shows that you have interest in the region. Whether you've been several times or have a curiosity to engage within the region or go to a new country in the region that you haven't been to. So while I don't need to direct your attention to Africa, it's important to point out some things that make it a great region within the scope of the Fulbright program, because as I mentioned, we work with over 125 different countries, so there's a lot to choose from. The Fulbright program to Africa is one that offers immense opportunity to have a very deep and lasting impact with the communities there. But when previous Fulbright scholars give us feedback about their experience, we hear the word transformative a lot, referring to both professional and personal aspects of life. Fulbrighters are welcomed into the communities that they conduct their grant activities in and are often invited to participate in local customs and other cultural events that may not be possible in a brief vacation visit. For grantees to Africa, the hope is that they would not only teach or conduct research, but also work with their counterparts to shape programs or advise or otherwise develop meaningful and sustainable ties with faculty and students. The potential to make a lasting impact is enormous and often the most rewarding part of the experience for grantees. I also want to briefly touch about our award benefits, because of course that's also a concern. We encourage you to bring your families with you and can provide support for up to two dependents. Our full award benefits are listed in our catalog of awards, and they do vary depending on which country you're planning on going to. But we generally provide a monthly stipend, airfare for you and your dependents, book and research allowance, dependent tuition allowance, as well as a housing allowance. We have over 50 award opportunities in 27 countries: Benin, Botswana, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Ethiopia, Ghana, Guinea, Kenya, Madagascar, Malawi, Mauritius, Mozambique, Namibia, Niger, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, Sierra Leone, South Africa, Sudan, Swaziland, Tanzania, Uganda, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. I'm mentioning all of them, which might seem a bit strange, because there's a reason to go to each of one. There's something unique about each of them. Since you can apply to just one award per year, you might be wondering on how to narrow your focus. The awards catalog found on the CIES webpage should really be the first place you look when considering an application. The award descriptions are designed by the public affairs sections of the U.S. embassies and contain information that is specific to the interests and needs of each country. Keep in mind that the vast majority of countries in Africa have an open all-disciplines award that welcome applicants in any field to submit an application. Within the all-disciplines award, countries often list their preferences, so I would encourage you to really take special consideration to awards that either match your discipline or have an all-disciplines award with the preference that is your discipline. If it is not titled all-disciplines, you may also still find broad and flexible awards with names like African Regional Research Program and Social Sciences and Humanities. open up the awards catalog, and you will see a variety of ways to search for awards. In addition to searching by country, you can filter by activity, by discipline, by degree required, if the award is open to early career, and you can also perform a keyword search. So for me, I'll go into a demo in a little bit after the presentation, but I often will just click find awards and then I will type in a keyword search. But if you just want to see all of the opportunities that are out there, you could just click select region in sub-Saharan Africa or select country area and choose the country that's on your mind. Or also go by your discipline. We have a lot of different ways you can do it. I prefer a keyword search, but we do have a lot of different drop-downs to make your life easier. So my advice in this sphere is to take some time, review the expectations, and do some of your own research into the educational and cultural and political context to ensure an ideal match between yourself and the host country. Also, I often talk to people who are applying, and it comes down to a question of timing. So what works with their schedule, what works with, you know, if they're able to take sabbatical, if they need an option that's more flexible, if they can only go in the spring. So you can also look by timing. You can look for opportunities that are 3 to 5 months. You can look for opportunities that are 12 months. So that's something that I also want to mention, because I know sometimes, you know, all of the intention is there. You're so ready to go. You're so ready to apply, but you just need something that works with your schedule. So we know that, and that's built into our system. So now that I've talked about some general information surrounding the program and how to get started, I will talk about some more specific opportunities. And I'll start off by saying this presentation is not going to discuss opportunities in each and every country. There's simply not enough time for that, and I also don't think it would necessarily really benefit you the most, as I know a lot of you have really specific questions that you have, which I want to make sure to have time to address later. This is really just a snapshot and overview. So what I would like to do is to direct you to resources for your own exploration, and also point out some of the overall award structures in sub-Saharan Africa, highlight important disciplines as well as unique opportunities. And as a fun fact, the countries added in the last few years include Sudan, Mauritius, and Madagascar. Many applicants find it helpful to review the work of past Fulbright grantees, and the Fulbright Scholar Directory is available on our website. This archive allows you to search for program alumni by criteria such as grant year, home institutions here in the U.S., host country, host university, and discipline. And I'll try to remember to pull that up for you as well at the end so you can see what that looks like, but you can just type in a Fulbright Scholar Directory into Google and it'll be right there. So teaching in sub-Saharan Africa. Every single one of the countries in the region has a teaching or teaching research combination option. Teaching, training, and curriculum expertise is prioritized throughout the region and is open to all levels of scholars and professionals who are investing in the infrastructure of African higher education. If you are proposing a research agenda to complement your teaching, it will be important to note any ratios of teaching to research, which can be found in the country overviews. So in certain cases, they will let you know, we really want someone to come teach 80% of the time that they're there and do research the remaining 20%. In other cases, you're going to have to make that decision yourself based on the needs of the host institution, your own personal interest, and other factors like that. So your narrative and the activity of your project should parallel this correlation when discussing teaching and research. I'm just repeating what I just said, but yeah, so just make sure that you are cognizant of what the award specifies, as well as just what makes the most sense. So in making connections with faculty abroad, our website provides a number of resources. In many cases, institutions are listed in the awards catalog with university websites and contact persons. This is especially true where there is discipline-specific awards. The benefit there is that the host institution is already identified for you. Think about the existing networks and contacts. You already have the international office on campus. Your institution might have ties to institutions abroad, visiting scholars on campus, or students who are studying abroad. Additionally, as I mentioned, please take advantage of our scholar directories. Since we publish details for every U.S. and visiting scholar on our website, they're an excellent resource for questions about their grant experience. Remember to also reach out to visiting scholars as well, who all come from universities you're hoping to partner with. And lastly, if you are really struggling with finding a contact person at a university, perhaps there's not a good website for the institution you'd like to go to, or they just don't have any university contacts listed online, let me know, and I am happy to see if there's anything I can do on my end. My process is usually just to reach out to the embassy in country, and they sometimes have recommendations, as they have very extensive networks. So research in sub-Saharan Africa. So I mentioned teaching opportunities, and now I'd like to talk about ways to do pure research in Africa, so just a research-only project. There are two ways. One is the African Regional Research Program, which I will refer to as the ARRP, and the awards to South Africa. I'll focus mostly on ARRP today. So ARRP allows you to conduct research in the country of your choosing. We offer opportunities with 26 countries in Africa, excluding South Africa, because they have their own 10-month research program. It has two overall objectives: to increase or develop new contacts and intellectual ties between U.S. and African communities, and to contribute to scholarship in Africa. With this in mind, the most competitive proposals will be those that describe a significant and achievable research project and demonstrate commitment to developing scholarly relationships with African faculty. This program permits working in a single country or in up to three countries for comparative research. Make sure that you have outlined a timeline of activities in your proposal and indicated who you will work with in each country. You may propose working in any country where there is an active Fulbright program. Please be aware that if you're interested in a research-only project to South Africa, as I mentioned, you would need to apply to the South Africa Country Award. Keep in mind that though you'll invest primarily in collaborative research, long-term impact is one of the hallmarks of the Fulbright program. Consider ways to engage students and local stakeholders in your research. Make plans to share your research in a guest lecture or by leading seminars on research methods. Most scholars partner with universities who serve as the host, but other institutions such as NGOs, government ministries, and so on are also permissible. A letter of invitation is required for this program, and I will go into what that means exactly in a little bit. One exciting part of this research program is the ability to conduct your research in separate visits and phases over two consecutive academic years through our Flex Award. So this goes back to what I mentioned earlier. We do understand that people don't always have the time to go to Africa or another country for 10 months, which is what a lot of our awards require. So we recently created more flexible opportunities like the Flex Award. Flex Awards are designed for scholars who require multiple visits to the host country. The timing needs to be supported by a letter of invitation. An interested applicant should devise a project timeline and a discussion of how this structure is beneficial to the project and to the host country. So sometimes it doesn't make sense to break up your award into 1 month, 2 month segments. You need more time to be in the country and to gather the data or do interviews or just simply talk to people. But in certain cases, it does make sense, and that's a model where maybe it'll be more beneficial because you can see, you can look at something over a longer period of time, and perhaps that will benefit your research. You have to really think about it logically and see what makes the most sense for the project you're proposing. I'm happy to discuss the minimum lengths and details if you are considering a Flex Award. Please note that this is the only award in the region that offers a Flex Award, so unfortunately we don't offer Flex Awards with teaching, although if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. I also want to mention, though, although this kind of contradicts what I said, but we also have the Global Scholar Award, so that's not exactly under my portfolio. We have a separate team that handles the Global Scholar Awards, Global Awards at IIE.org. So the Global Scholar Award offers you the chance to, I believe you can teach or research through it, but it offers you the chance to do a Fulbright in two different countries or possibly three in different hemispheres. So Sub-Saharan Africa could be one of the ones you choose. So that is also an option if you wanted do research or do something that and compare it in different countries. Although my team doesn't provide support for that, but the Global Scholar Award team can absolutely answer any questions you have about how that process works. They also have the Flex option. And just going back to the African Regional Research Program, I do want to point out that the monthly stipend for this program will be the same as the monthly rates for researchers in the proposed country or countries. In addition, you can look at the country-specific awards to see the list of eligible affiliates or contact me if you have any questions. So if you're confused by what that means, if you are applying to the African Regional Research Program and you get on the award page and you're like, this sounds great, this is something I'm definitely interested in doing. However, there's no information about the countries I'm looking at on this award page. You'll just go back to the catalog of awards, search for the country that you're interested in going to, and look at the award opportunities at that country and take the financial information from there and use that as your baseline, and also look at the institutions that are listed on there as approved Fulbright affiliates, or just let me know and I can see if the institution that you're interested in working with is eligible or not. And the reason why not all institutions are eligible really depends, but in some cases an institution might have had bad experience with Fulbright scholars and the U.S. Embassy doesn't want to send any more Fulbright scholars there, or perhaps it's a really, really new institution, or it's not accredited. There's a lot of different reasons, or maybe it's just not a priority. There's a lot of different reasons, and I may not necessarily be able to explain what the reason is, but I can certainly talk to the embassy and get an answer for them on how they feel about the institution, or perhaps if you have a contact you want to put them in touch with, I can share that information. So that's one of the things that I can do on my end. Just wanted to point it out. So I am spending a lot of time on this slide, and I won't spend too much longer on it, but I also just want to circle back briefly to South Africa. So we have opportunities for teaching research, and pure research in South Africa under two wide categories, science and technology and social science and humanities. As you can imagine, South Africa is a country where a lot of scholars have institutional or research collaborations and know quite a bit about the country and what is current with their disciplines in the country. Naturally, this combination leads to high competition for Fulbright grants, so keep a few things in mind as you consider an application to South Africa. Placing Fulbright scholars at a range of South African universities is a priority for the program, and applications involving historically disadvantaged South African universities are of particular importance. And I do have a list of those historically disadvantaged institutions if you are interested in applying to South Africa and are interested in working with one of them. Look in the awards catalog for some helpful university information and their website to give you ideas. One way to make your proposal more competitive is to plan on partnering with two institutions in the same geographic area. Because a letter of invitation is required for this country, applications proposing dual affiliations will need to include multiple invitation letters, each acknowledging this plan to co-host. And again, I will give you more information about letters of invitation in a bit. While you're exploring the opportunities within South Africa, spend some time also thinking about neighboring Southern African countries. The most compelling Fulbright applications are ones where your training and experience and the type of project are the most appropriate match for a host country. So while I'm not attempting to dissuade you from going to South Africa if it's the best place for you to do a project, I'd urge you to consider other countries, especially if you have more flexibility in your research. If you're looking to compare similar issues also found in Malawi or Zambia or Swaziland, or if you have had enthusiastic conversations with teaching about teaching with other universities, you may want to consider other Southern Africa destinations. So I just put this slide together today, and I'm excited to just give you a little more information about language requirements. So a popular topic for this part of the world is what sort of language requirements are expected. Host universities in Francophone and Lusophone Africa are eager to engage with scholars, and each award description will offer guidance on what level of French or Portuguese is required to be competitive for an award. This applies specifically to teaching and teaching research grants. In most cases where there is some sort of level of proficiency required, applicants will be asked to complete a language proficiency report, which is found in the application. In many cases, you do not need a language requirement if you are teaching American studies or American literature, as I've pointed out here. So that is something to keep in mind if you teach either of those subjects. For research, you will need to have the language skills appropriate to successfully complete your project, which varies. This means different things. If you are working with bilingual collaborators or looking through archives, the language you will need would be different than if you were conducting interviews or collecting primary data in rural areas. Think about the challenges, what you will need to be successful, and how you can use your time between now and 2019 to address any deficiencies. Some people will make a note in their language proficiency report that they're planning on taking additional language classes, and you know, if you look here, Tanzania encourages individuals to take Swahili classes. They'll say in certain countries that, like, in Mauritius, teaching is in English, but knowledge of French is an advantage. It will make your application more competitive. It will also just make your life easier if you do get the award. So I've listed all of these with a lot of detail, and it may not be relevant to you if you aren't going to any of these countries or at all interested, but it shows you how different each country handles this. And perhaps there are countries that you ruled out because of a language requirement that you actually could apply to. So all of the slides, including this one, will be posted online after the webinar within a week. So just to let you know, all this information will be online. But I'd encourage you to, you know, open your mind. Think about the countries that you might be eligible for, countries that you didn't think you were. All right, now I'd like to move on and show you a few of the commonly requested disciplines for Sub-Saharan Africa. The list on this and the next slide is not exhaustive, but you'll notice that opportunities range from unique public health and medical sciences awards to American literature and business administration. We've noted some particular topics of interest to a range of country programs. Projects focusing on agriculture and American studies have been increasingly mentioned, as well as issues related to economic development, computer science, and environmental sciences. We've gotten feedback from a number of country programs that they welcome projects related to women's and youth equality issues. So for countries, the language requirement, as I mentioned, scholars in American studies may be able to sidestep that and apply for instruction in English. It's definitely of great interest throughout the region. I won't go through all of these in detail, but I will point out a few of them just to give you an idea of the kinds of things that we look for and the kinds of activities that scholars engage in on a grant. So with that in mind, Senegal is looking for an academic with 3 years of postdoctoral teaching experience to teach undergraduate and graduate courses in a wide range of disciplines. They're looking for someone to assist with thesis advising, graduate seminars and conferences, and additionally to conduct research in areas of specialization. Scholars may likely teach two classes, advise graduate students, and devote 40% of their time to research. And I also want to point out Swaziland, which is open to academics and professionals, preferably looking for someone with a PhD or a master's in journalism and mass communication to teach undergraduate courses in reporting for television, television production, television advertising, and public relations. 12 hours per week of courses and practicals are estimated with an average class size of 13 students. They're also looking for someone to supervise student research projects and assist in training local journalists from various media houses, both print and broadcasting. In addition to teaching, opportunity is also available to undertake research. Now I'll show you my next major discipline highlights. And wanted to point out that we do have some new awards throughout the region, specifically the award to Mauritius, Teaching and Research in Intellectual Property, and the two awards to Botswana, Applied Sciences and Cybersecurity and or Digital Forensic. Those are both two new awards. For the Cybersecurity Award, Botswana is looking for a PhD in the relevant area, someone with at least 5 years of experience. They are willing to consider non-academics if they have experience looking for law enforcement areas. The visiting scholar is expected to teach undergraduate courses in cybersecurity and or digital forensics. The number of contact hours per week will not be more than 8. Those will mostly include lectures, as labs and tutorials will be handled by local teaching instructors and assistants. However, the scholar is expected to provide a complete guide on how labs and tutorials have to be run to work closely with the TAs. He or she is expected to set up at least 2 tests and exam papers, and the emphasis should really be on practical hands-on experience with this. And just to touch upon some of them, again, this isn't a thorough deep down review. We do have a few awards in political science. Another country that's interested in political science is Guinea. They're particularly interested in peace and security studies and public policy as well. STEM is a priority across the region. The awards to Rwanda specifically name relevant fields in the title. Many opportunities lie within all disciplines awards, such as our awards to Namibia in Guinea, and although these don't say STEM in the title, it is listed in their preferred disciplines or specializations. Teaching English as a foreign language, TEFL, and applied linguistics are also highly encouraged in this region. The countries that have historically had an interest in TEFL are Cameroon, Cote d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Mozambique, Niger, and Rwanda. Please note that the activity of these awards is to train teachers of English and advise on TEFL curriculum development as opposed to teaching English. So next, here's a slide with all of our application components listed. This is also available on our website with clear guidelines and posted award criteria. Instead of going through each required piece, I'll focus on how to submit a competitive application. But again, if you look at the application components and guidelines, these are separate documents. One's called application components, the other is called application guidelines on our website. there are many, many resources, and it'll probably answer a lot of the questions that you have. All right, submitting a competitive application. You will see the application components listed on our website with clear guidelines and the posted award criteria. As mentioned, instead of going through each piece, I'll focus on how to submit a competitive application. To find the right award for you, please match your expertise, experience, and proposal to the award description. One thing I want to note is that sometimes people have an idea of what they want to do, and they've basically already written the proposal before they even look at the website. I get it. You know, you're passionate about something, you know what you want to study, what you want to teach your research, and that's wonderful to see that passion, but it's really important to make sure that we have an opportunity that fits what you want to do. So make sure that you read the catalog of award and the requirements and the specifications of the award that you're applying for, because you're putting a lot of work in the application, and it doesn't make sense. It's like trying to cook a meal without reading the recipe. And we put the recipe out there. We have all of the things that we're setting you up for success. So I'd really recommend reading the guidelines and reading all of the information we have out there. We also post our review criteria online, and that is another resource I'd really highly recommend looking at. I'd encourage you to focus on creating a project that's innovative, impactful, as well as feasible. Is your teaching filling a unique need in the university abroad? Are you planning on doing research that has never been done in that country and has potential lasting impact? I'll go through a few of the items in the application, but for example, when you're putting together your project statement, it should be a brief self-introduction to the reviewers and an opportunity to provide answers to the questions reviewers may have about you, such as, why are you interested in a Fulbright Award and why in this particular place? What professional experiences and skills do you offer the host institution and host country? What do you hope to gain from the experience? What is the potential lasting value for you, the host institution, host country, home institution, home country? Are you adaptable and have you dealt with challenging situations? Focus on what you plan to do. Don't simply recite your resume. We already have that. Remember, your proposal is reviewed by many stakeholders, so make sure it is digestible to people outside of your field. There will be a discipline review for more technical aspects after August 1st. Regarding your references, while it is useful to have someone with a known reputation in the field, the best criteria for recommendations is someone who knows your work and character extensively. We advise mixing internal and external letters to demonstrate the breadth of your contacts. You should, for example, get 3 strong current reference letters from your supervisor, someone not at your home institution, and from a colleague who knows your work well. If you are applying for a teaching award, one of your references should speak to your teaching ability. Specifically for research proposals, make sure that you establish a clear need to reside in the host country and how to use models, timelines, and a comprehensive discussion of your methodology. And your plan to use the time in an ambitious but feasible way. Some questions to consider are, what are current trends in your field in a chosen country? In what ways are you leveraging, connecting, or initiating new research for this discipline? What is the state of research facilities or other resources? What access will you need and have you prepared for it? What are challenges facing your specific methods? How will you address them? And do you have alternate plans in place? It's really important to be flexible while you write your research proposal because things happen when you move abroad. So next I will briefly go over affiliations and invitations. A letter of invitation is an expression of interest from a host institution outside of the United States. It's a key part of your application as it will be used to evaluate your application. There are no specific requirements, but it might include the activities for which you are being invited by the host, the period of time for which you are invited, and a description of the host's interest in the applicant's project. A few notes about the invitation. It's non-binding, meaning that an institution could issue multiple letters of invitation. It should be from the person that you are collaborating with most closely, and it should be on letterhead. It's important to start reaching out to collaborators early, as it can take time to get a letter of invitation. And keep me in loop if you think that you might need additional time. The award description will indicate if a letter of invitation is necessary. If the award doesn't require it, I generally encourage people to still pursue an invitation, especially in your plans to teach while on grant. This demonstrates to the panel who will review your application that you've taken the time to research an appropriate fit for your host institution. You might also find your plans evolving with input from the host university once you learn more about the types of students or courses offered. Next, I will talk about the review process and timeline. So here is a list of some really important dates. Most important to note is the deadline of August 1. Then there will be a series of US-based review where your application is reviewed by your peers, people in the same discipline as you, and former Fulbright scholars to the region. Applicants are notified around December if applications are recommended for further review abroad. If they are, the applications are sent to the countries in question, to the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs, and finally to the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. The timeframe for notification is made on a rolling basis and ranges widely from country to country and year to year. I do want to note that we do not provide feedback on applications, so if your application does not make it through any of the stages, unfortunately we aren't able to provide feedback, but we can provide general coaching on how to submit a competitive application. Here are some application resources. The application guidelines are particularly important. We also offer sample project statements if you would like some inspiration. We do have all of our webinars recorded, so you can look at other webinars. We'll have application walkthrough webinars and information on opportunities throughout the region, as well as the Fulbright Scholar blog, which is a great source if you would like to see examples of Fulbright scholars who've gone abroad and hear their story and see what they did. And there's also a link to our catalog of awards here. So with that, I will give a very, very brief mini walkthrough of the catalog of awards and some of our application resources. It will be quite short because I want to leave a couple of minutes to answer questions. If I don't get a chance to answer your question today, then feel free to email me, or I will try to follow up, but also feel free to email me. Okay, so I'll start with some of our, so here's our main webpage. If you, CIES.org, if you go to Programs US Scholar Core, this is where you find information, general information about our program. Overview will take you to the catalog of awards, eligibility information, application timelines, FAQs. The application guidelines, which I mentioned, is something you should definitely take a look at. The guidelines, what we ask from you, will vary depending on what type of award you're applying for. So that's a great basic place to start out looking. I'll go back to this in a minute, but I also just really briefly want to just show you what our blog looks like. So because when I first started working with the Fulbright program, I didn't realize we had such an extensive blog, but our colleagues work really hard to make sure that it has a lot of resources. So I've pulled up specifically stories about sub-Saharan Africa, and these are really great stories from previous Fulbright scholars. We also generally will be like listing more application resources through here as well. So this is great if you like to get an idea of, you know, what Fulbright values, who we've sent on Fulbright grants. We also have alumni ambassadors, and these are people who represent the Fulbright program in a really wonderful way, and you can see their stories, you can learn more information about who they are and what they did. And those are two resources I really encourage you to look at. People ask me all the time They just want to know like who's been chosen for Fulbright grants, and we put that information online. I'd really encourage you to look at it. You can also look at our Fulbright Scholar Directory if you'd like to talk to anyone. I will pull it up really quickly. So this is our Fulbright Scholar Directory. You can sort by U.S. Scholar and non-U.S. Visiting Scholar. I'd encourage you to pull up those two, and you can really look by a variety of different options. Discipline is a great one, or the country that they went to. We don't have the contact information for people on here, but in general, they work at universities, so you can find them online quite easily. And lastly, just to walk you through in just 1 minute, our catalog of awards. Here it is. And what I want to show you is what I see when I look at our catalog of awards. So So I want to show you what I see when I'm here. I will often do keyword searches, as you can see. And when I look on here, I'll look at first, I'll start on the right side and then I'll go to the left, but you can see the number of grants. Grants equals funding. This is the number of people that we'd like to send to this country. You can see the activity, teaching or research. You can see if it's open to early career or not. You can see if it requires a PhD or not. My contact information is here if you'd like to arrange a phone call or send me an email. You can see the general grant activity. Sometimes this is very general, but it does give you an idea of what they're looking for. You can see the timing, so they'd like someone to come in August and stay for 6 to 10 months. They'd like them to work with a Chamber of Commerce. Although if you would like to work with someone else, you could let me know. Although this is a new award, so most likely they do want someone specifically to go to the Chamber of Commerce. You can see the disciplines they're looking for. And on the award requirements page, we'll let you know about the language requirements, if a letter of invitation is required, if it's open to professionals, and more context about it. So this is additional comments. It sounds vague. This is where they're telling you the history of the award and why they're creating it. It's important information. It's buried a little bit, but it's there. And I encourage you to really look through all of these tabs to see the information that we have. We also have helpful links about the website that you should look. And the award benefits are the financial ones. This one isn't as beefed up as most of them are, but in general, the award benefits page will list specific benefits like airfare, university fare, et cetera. I think this page just needs to be updated a little bit. And for the country overview, this page, I don't think anyone reads this page besides me, but I really would encourage you to. Because you can see a lot of reasons, you can see just their priorities when you look at their country overview in many cases. Not everyone has that information, but it often has a lot of key information. And so here, they're letting you know who they're looking for, why they're looking for them. And they also have information about, if you want to talk to someone at the U.S. Embassy, you can. So this is just a very brief mini interview, but this is something that whenever I have a phone call with someone, I wish I could show them, because there are so many things on these pages that are sometimes in places you wouldn't expect. So I'd really encourage you to take a look. And all right, that concludes my very mini brief overview of what the catalog of awards looks like. Now we will briefly answer some questions. And again, if I'm not able to get to your questions now, then feel free to email me, and I will certainly try to email you. But if it slips my mind, feel free to send me an email.
Okay. So the first question we have is, do you help with developing the budget?
Oh, that's a great question. So the budget is something that's made with the Bureau of Education and Cultural Affairs. I personally, working in outreach, don't touch the budget, but it's something that is, it's really, really out of my control. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that? So I can, if you have questions, specific questions about the budget, I can forward them to my colleagues and get a response potentially. But generally, at this point, a lot of it is just the information that I can provide is the information that's online.
Another good question is, are any countries interested in women and gender studies?
That's a great question, yes. We do have countries that are interested in women and gender studies, and if you send me an email, I'd be more than happy to send you a list of those opportunities.
Are grants to South Africa more competitive than other Sub-Saharan Africa countries?
Yes. So South Africa and the African Regional Research Program, those are our most competitive awards. I kind of attribute this to something that I call name recognition, as well as the fact that a lot of scholars just have ties to South Africa or have done research with South Africa. So yes, if you apply to an award to South Africa, it will be highly competitive, not to say that you don't have a chance, but you should really be very clear as to why you need to do your research in South Africa or teach in South Africa.
Can you talk about creating a flex grant for two or three countries?
Sure. So if you're creating a flex grant for two or three countries, you should make a timeline. So you should make sure that you're very clear as to how long you want to spend at each country, when you want to go to each country. Sometimes people go consecutively, so they'll just go like one after another, and sometimes they will break it up over 2 years to take advantage of that flexibility in time. It's important to make sure that you know the context of each country, that it's an issue that's important in each country, because in general, people are comparing like one thing in three countries, or it builds upon each other in some way. So it's just important to make sure that you do a lot of research. If you're going to that many countries, sometimes people, for example, will be working with an institution that's working in multiple countries, and so it makes sense to go to those different countries, and then they have that sort of resource. But alternatively, you'll have to just find connections between it and tie it all together and make sure that you tell a compelling story about why it's important to go to multiple countries.
And then, can you apply for more than one award in more than one country per application cycle?
So per application cycle, you can apply to one award. If you are not accepted to a Fulbright grant, you can apply to another award in the following competition. But yes, we only accept one application per competition.
And that includes the Global Scholar Award as well.
That does include the Global Scholar Award.
Great. And then can you talk more about dependents and the feasibility of bringing them abroad?
Sure. So that's a great question. I would say, so we provide financial support to bring your dependents abroad, so round-trip airfare as well as tuition, and they would have housing because they would be staying with you. But in terms of these, like, nitty-gritty questions, the U.S. Embassy in-country will often be a great support, as well as the pre-departure orientations that many Fulbright scholars go to before they leave. They answer questions like this, as well as the advisor that you're paired with. And at this point, if you'd like to talk to someone, you know, because you're in the application cycle, I'd recommend talking to a previous Fulbright scholar to the region, so perhaps looking at our scholar directory or looking on our blog to see how specific people have handled it, but it is going to be really dependent on the country that you're going to, which is something that I would keep in mind. So, you know, not every country is going to have, they're going to have different challenges or different things to think about. So looking at the Fulbright Scholar Directory is one thing you could do right now, but we do provide our grantees with additional resources.
So I am an adjunct faculty and will no longer be affiliated with my current university by the time the next award period begins. Are my chances hurt by applying as an independent scholar?
Absolutely not. You do not need to be affiliated with a home institution in order to apply. We also let retired individuals apply to the Fulbright program. What I would keep in mind is that we look at the impact that you will have on your home institution or home country when you come back. So you don't have a home institution, that's okay, but are you like, if you're planning, if you work with any institutions or community groups or anything like that, think of the ways that you can continue the impact of your Fulbright once you come back to the U.S., and make sure to specify that in your application.
Okay. So within that same vein, am I a competitive applicant or not if I am an early career scholar or if I'm retired?
Great. So those are both great questions. I would keep in mind that we look at your application in the context of your profile. So we don't compare, we look at someone who's an early career scholar, and we will look at, for example, if you're applying to a research opportunity, we'll look at the publications that you've done so far and see if it makes sense in the context of where you are. So we're not gonna compare you to someone who's had years and years and years of experience. And if you're retired, it's the same. So we look at where you are in your career, and we evaluate you on that level. So we encourage early career and retired individuals to apply, especially early career. We have certain opportunities that are geared specifically to postdocs. And we want to make sure that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Fulbright represents a really diverse pool, and these are some factors that are included in diversity.
So can permanent residents apply for the U.S. Scholars Program, or do you need to be a citizen?
You do need to be a U.S. citizen to apply to the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program.
Okay. And then can we work with universities that aren't listed as the original location's grant description?
So if you're interested in working with a university that's not listed on the catalog of awards, just let me know, and I'm more than happy to follow up and see if it's an appropriate affiliation.
Okay. And then how can I get statistics of awards for a particular country for a given discipline?
So we do not publish any application statistics for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Other Fulbright programs, like the Fulbright Student Program, do publish statistics. However, it's not our policy. We recommend that you apply to a Fulbright program, to the specific award opportunity that is the best fit for you. And there are so many different things to keep in mind. It doesn't make sense for us to publish application requirements. It doesn't really give the right information. It's really better to apply to something that's a good fit for your experience and your expertise and your discipline.
And is the Fulbright Scholar Program open to professionals outside of academia?
Yes, absolutely. So I mentioned earlier in a communication and journalism award, for example, and that was specifically open to professionals outside of academia. It'll mention on our opportunities if it is available to professionals. Many of our awards are. It is important to look at the requirements and make sure that you'll have the appropriate experience. It might make more sense for you. Like if you don't have any teaching experience at all, I wouldn't recommend applying for a teaching award. But you might be a good fit for a research award. Just look at our catalog of awards and see exactly what they say on there, and feel free to talk to me if you still need additional clarification.
Okay. And then is this webinar going to be archived?
Yes, absolutely. So we have all of our webinars archived online on our webinars page, and usually it's within a week of when it's done. So it'll be archived online within a week. As well as the slides.
And maybe just a few more questions since we're over time. Can a past Fulbright student grantee apply for the scholar program to the same country they went as a student?
Yes, you can apply to a Fulbright scholar program if you were a Fulbright student or a Fulbright specialist. I would encourage you to include a justification as to why you want to return to the country, and if you are building on, if you're doing a similar project, explain how you would build upon your previous Fulbright. Well, actually, either way, explain how you would build upon your previous Fulbright experience.
And then, so you mentioned that list of historically disadvantaged South African universities. Where can we find that?
Just send me an email, and I can provide you with that information.
Two more. Is a flex option applicable to many countries for research?
Yes. So the African Regional Research Program, which is the option, which provides the flex option for research, is available for 26 countries. So all of the countries, almost all of the countries in the Sub-Saharan Africa region that we work with, except for South Africa, because they have their own research program.
And then we'll do one more. So I am an early career academic. I recently received my doctorate in African history and have only taught for a few quarters. What is the best program for me to apply to?
Feel free to send me your resume, and we can talk about it more in detail to see the opportunities that are the best fit for you. All right, thank you all so much. This concludes the webinar. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I'm more than happy to talk to any of you individually if I missed your question or if you have any additional follow-up questions about the best fit for you. Thank you so much.